Welcome to the Property Premier League, the weekly podcast where property meets Premier League football. I'm your host, Chris Mervin, and joining me are my co-hosts, Steve Green and Jamie Asplund. Each week, we'll dive into the world of property and football from the unique perspective of professionals who live and breathe both. As diehard fans of Spurs, Palace and Everton, we know a thing or two about the highs and lows that come with both the beautiful game and the property market. Whether it's the thrill of a last-minute goal or the challenges of a market shift, we've got the stories, insights and banter to keep you entertained. So, if you're passionate about property, Premier League football or both, you're in the right place. Get ready for the weekly dose of all things property and football with the Property Premier League. Let's kick off. Now, in today's episode, we're going to tackle latest news, to be fair, which is all going to be about the government's fantastic, enlightening, amazing plan to change and revolutionise the buying process and selling process of the open market and private treaty. I actually got a guest on today, which is Eb Ola from Wolverstone's solicitor. Promise we won't gang up on you, mate, about too much about private treaty and why it takes so long to go through things. But again, your expertise is greatly appreciated to obviously for the masses and millions of viewers, as Jamie always said, that listen to the podcast. You can really understand from your side in particular what goes wrong and how we can change things a little bit perhaps as well. Now, Eb, Chelsea, first off, you're a Chelsea
fan. That's it.
How did that come
indeed. Around? So it was back in the day. So my family are one that have divided teams. We no one supports the same team. So my mum's a Man United fan. My dad's an Arsenal fan. My brother's a Liverpool fan. My sister's a Man United fan. And I'm a Chelsea man. Blue is my colour. And yeah, I think when I first started watching football, yeah, Chelsea and Chelsea blue. And then you had the players, the Marcel Desailly's, the Gianfranco Zola, the Dennis Wise, Celestine Babayaro, who's a Nigerian. I think he went on to play for Newcastle in the end, I think.
Frank Lepouf.
And that's it. Yeah, we had players and we had a great team. And just the way we played football, I just enjoyed it. And yes, since then, and that was before Abramovich came to the bridge and transformed things. So those that call me a glory hunter, you're very wrong. Yeah, I've been supporting the Blues from what I can remember watching football.
Mate, I would never say that to you.
I hope not.
Only literally less than 10 minutes ago.
Literally.
Great, fantastic. So you must have been enjoying the season so far. I guess you it's a little steps, isn't it? I mean, it's back.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're pushing forward and then next minute you're not.
And that's it. And to be honest, you have to expect that inconsistency at the moment.
Yeah.
We have a new squad entirely and even...
Young squad.
Two years ago, we did a massive overhaul. And even this year, we've actually undertaken another massive overhaul again of the first team squad. So you have to expect that there will be that inconsistency. So I fully accept that. But what I want to see is the performance improving week on week. And in fairness, I can see that against the big teams, but against the smaller teams or lesser teams that will happily defend for 90 minutes of a game, we're struggling. And you can see that at Brentford. You could see that when we lost to Man United, although they actually attacked us from the get-go. Again, it didn't help going down to 10 men. Yeah, you know, I think our season at the moment, just off the back of a Liverpool win where the performance from start to finish was just solid. There's no one that I could actually fault. I look at that game and I say, do you know what? Yeah, if this is just a glimpse of what to potentially follow, given the time, given the consistent management as well, then I think, you know, we'll be up there come the business end of the season.
The squad's got too many players out of interest, as in, so it's easy to keep changing. We spoke about it a couple of weeks back where he can keep changing because he's got so many players and have to stick with anybody.
Exactly. Options that he has to work with right now. It's a good or bad thing. It's a bad thing because you'll then struggle to have that set 11. It's a good thing because when you're playing so many games as you do, you know, just off the back of the Club World Cup, and then you have players that obviously go on to play internationals. I don't think there's a player in our first team that wouldn't get into their international teams. And as a result, if there are players that don't make the squad, then we have players to choose from. It reduces the amount of injuries, but somehow we can't run away from the medical room at the moment. We have, I think, the longest injury list in the Premier League, maybe after one other club, I think. So again, it's a good and bad thing. It's good to have the option and the rotation. More so if players are actually getting game time. There's still a lot of players that are fringe players and they're not getting the game time that I think is needed to really at least let us know what you're about. You know, a lot of these players you're spending over the odds for. And if you are spending over the odds, then you want to see what you're getting for that money. Bad, but only because, again, you then end up with, you know, the bomb squad of players, the players that are on the outside looking in, and then you have the PFA looking into how you're actually managing and treating these players, and rightly or wrongly so, You know, the way Chelsea, and that's the one thing I have or appreciate about Chelsea, the way we do business is better than any other club. We made the most money across the world, I think, selling players this year, definitely in the league. I think more than 300 million in income from player sales. You know, you look at the players that are in the Blom squad right now, you know, the Disasis, the Raheem Sterlings, they had options to leave. They had options to go elsewhere and they chose not to take it up. You know, Sterling had Crystal Palace, had Fulham on his door and chose to basically sit in the reserves or sit with the youth team. So again, I like the options that we have, but I don't like seeing players basically being paid a salary to play football with the under 20s. That's money that's being poorly spent, in my
opinion.
What's
he on? Is it
what's 350?
350
a week.
Oh, that's mad.
It's not this season and next season, Anthony, though, still.
Yeah, that's right.
Do you worry about getting a consistent side? Like trying to please everybody, like Gittins is in 1 minute and then Garnacho is in.
Exactly.
You know, there's no kind of flow because he has to keep rotating it. So you don't get that pattern.
Yeah, and that's it. And you almost then have players that don't really understand what it means to play for Chelsea because they're not in the team long enough to really embed themselves and understand what it means to play for the badge. You know, you see that with Caicedo. Look at Caicedo. Anytime he scores, you know that he is a Chelsea player through and through, even though he's only been here for two or so years, but he's firmly established. Whereas you then look at other players that were French players or were sent out on loan, that connection with the support, that connection with the team and what it means to actually play for Chelsea.
Well, it seems to be the wingers. It's always the wingers that suffer at Chelsea. Like if you're a winger going in there and there's another four around you, like, yeah, I'm getting rotated here.
And that's it. It is. But it also means you have to be on top of your game. The only way you stay in the squad is if you perform. Look at Neto. Neto has been in the team and he hasn't really been a bench player for a long time. And he's been in the team because he produces. Whether it's due to, you know, just assists or whether it's the odd goal here and there, even his work rate when it comes to defending as a team, he puts in the legwork and you cannot fault him. Yeah, he's a great, great squad player and he deserves to be in the first team right now. Whereas you look at the likes of Gittins, his output, although he's only really had chances, he's not really had an opportunity to really establish himself in the squad. But, you know, he has glances or he has just moments and that needs to change. That needs to be consistent across the 90 minutes for you to stay in the squad. So I do like the options that we have on the wing. I do like the competition. But again, with certain players, it just doesn't work because you need that. You need those minutes. I play 11 aside at the moment and I know what it means when you play week in, week out. It's very different to training. You know, when you play week in, week out, you're up to speed from the get-go. You know, when you're in and out of the team, you know, you're off the pace, miles off the pace. And when you're playing, you know, against your 16, 17, 18-year-olds that are then running rings around you, you know, it becomes less and less appealing to put on the jersey and strap your boots up. But
is this speaking from your experience? Yeah.
Yeah, it is actually.
Didn't want to say anything.
Literally.
Mate.
Yeah.
Did you say centre half? You're a bit light at Chelsea at the moment, still not centre half. So you think you're okay with what you've got at the moment?
Well, with the level of, so we have enough, but it's the injuries. It's the injuries that's really killing us at the moment. We have more than enough centre halves when you look at it. I could literally list probably about 7 or 8. And then we have maybe 2 that are out on loan at the moment as well. 2 that could quite easily come in and be competing with the players that are currently holding it down in our first team. The likes of Chalobah, the likes of Tosin as well. Levi Colwell, obviously injured. These are players that should really be starting. Chalobah, he was close, nearly on his way out.
He took him back from Palace when he was on loan and he was doing well at Palace.
Literally, I don't really know why he went on loan in the first place. He, again, through the academy and a player that, it was very harsh. And so the fact that he's come back and established himself now and really and truly, it doesn't look like we have any intention of selling him anytime soon is where he should have been a few years ago. So I'm glad he's actually getting the recognition he actually
Maresca said to him in the summer, he said, like, you're not part of the squad. You're not going to be anywhere near the team. So I suggest you go out on loan. Goes out on loan to Palace, does really well, scores a load of goals.
And that's it. And that's it, next thing.
You got injuries, didn't you? I think it was.
And like, that's it, it was injuries.
We need
that
button
back. Yep, that's it.
Like, Ibrahimovic said, do you know what I said? I didn't mean it.
Yeah, it pretty much was like that, Jay.
And exactly. And when we look at it now, again, you have Disasi. It was just last week when against Liverpool, Achipong, who's come in, young player from our ranks again, and then the likes of Badiashile, who got injured in the game against Liverpool. Now we're looking at it with Chalobah, who's probably always, you know, one or two challenges away from being injured long-term himself. Tosin's got a calf injury. Colwell's out for the season. Then look at it, Achipong again getting injured. And as a young player, I wouldn't expect to see that. Apparently he's fine, but we'll see what happens. But again, you then look at it at Disasi in the bomb squad And that's a player that could quite easily make his way into the first team, easily, because, again, he's got that experience. He's played the minutes. He's played in the league. He knows what it means to also play for Chelsea. So, in terms of the centre-halves we have a lot of at our disposal, but it's really injuries that's killing us at the moment.
And it's so early in the season as well, mate. So it's too early for that to happen, to be fair.
Yeah.
You know, you've still got a big squad, so you should be
and that's it.
Should be able to be all right.
We should be. But again, you look at the players that are out on loan, and this is why it then makes it hard for us to actually go back out in the market and actually get more players, because then the players that you put out on loan and said, go get experience, learn your craft in whichever leagues, and then come back and you'll find yourself in the first team. We can't then go out and buy players, because not only do we have players already out on loan, but what message will that send to them? What message would it send to the players that are on the fringes that have stayed at Stamford Bridge this season? So it puts us in a very tricky position when it comes to covering those gaps whenever we find a position where, you know, one position is short, and significantly short at that.
It's a delicate balance, it really is. Let's go through last weekend's matches then, guys, if that's all right.
Yeah, let's
not.
No?
Let's
no,
not.
No, Steve, you're all right.
You're lucky I'm even on this today.
Oh, shut up. It's only one loss, mate. Okay, let's go. Let's start with Chelsea then, Liverpool. Yeah. We had these down as a one or two or draw, guys, didn't we, from last weekend? But Chelsea did business, so.
Yeah. I definitely saw that as a win, because in the last two times we played them, last year at Anfield, they got the result, but we basically played them off the pitch. And at Stamford Bridge, we actually beat them towards the end of the season. But people caveat that with, oh yeah, we'd already won the title, so we weren't playing for anything. But, and that's it. You know, they'll find an excuse as to why they didn't really put all into it. But really and truly, yeah, we played them off the pitch every time we've actually played them. And yeah, this was another example of us doing that. We just have their number basically on the day for whatever reason. We just know how to play against them. I think Maresca is a great tactician, and yeah, that definitely showed on the day.
Are we
never
thinking, guys,
like that singing the blues when Everton win and Liverpool lose?
That's it.
Guys, are we thinking that Liverpool are going to, this is a little blip, or have people sort of worked out a way to play against them?
I think people are calling for his head. He's only lost three games.
I know,
won the Premier League last year. They said he's got to go.
Great. But did he win the Premier League, or was it still a, you know,
still got to get there, mate,
Klopp leaving? Yeah, you do. You do.
But told you he wins it, didn't it? That's the worst thing.
And that's it. So I hear that. But yeah, no. I believe from the start of the season, Liverpool have been lucky. I think they've just been found out, and that's it. Last couple of games have been found out, and if you really expose them, you'll see that defensively speaking, they're actually very vulnerable. Van Dijk's not the same player that he has been for the last 2 years, but again, it's just about exposing these players. Konate doesn't really have the quality on the ball, and positionally speaking, he always seems all over the place.
It's shocking.
So, yeah.
That ball in behind Konate, between Konate and Bradley, and
mate,
it's a disaster waiting to happen.
Crazy. It happened so many times against Chelsea at the Bridge, and that's why he was taken off, I think, at half time. So, you know, it's same with Conor Bradley as well. I think both of them were taken off at half time, actually, which is very unusual to change, you know, half of your defence halfway through a game. But yeah, again, I think it just showed that, they're off the pace, basically, and they were exposed.
And he's falling in line with some of the players like Salah. They can't rely on him.
No.
He's not performing the way he was as well.
No, he's not.
Although they said about last season, they said exactly the same thing, but he did perform eventually. But
I think it's only because whilst he's not scoring, again, everything else that he doesn't do only comes to the light. And that's the issue. He's not scoring goals. If he starts scoring goals, the defensive work that he doesn't do and never has done, no one speaks about it. But because...
I spoke to a Liverpool fan yesterday, and he said, but no one can work out why it's gone wrong, because he's still got his pace. You don't lose the ability to shoot when you're a professional football player. So I just said, maybe it's just his heart. It's just gone, if that makes sense. Because he runs the same pace. He can still shoot. So why is he not scoring goals?
Yeah. I think they're trying to accommodate the other strikers, aren't they? Like, he's known as the main man. He's the guy that bangs in 20 goals a season.
Maybe that's what it is.
Liverpool aren't looking for him that anymore. They're looking for Ekitike to get the 20 goals, or Isak to get the 20 goals, because they know he's getting older. So they want him to be the playmaker, the setup, and let those two other lads score the goals. And his confidence, I think, is suffering because of that.
Yeah.
Personally.
I think you're right. So, good win for Chelsea. Let's go through the results then. Let's start with the mighty Spurs, because obviously we won away to Leeds. That was a blooming good result. We were well up against it. Both goals were against the run of play. And the second one in particular was massive defection. But hey, You've got to hit those shots on target, haven't you? I think we had expected goals of 0.4 or something by the end of it, and they had 2-odd. So yeah, it's a strange one. So, but yeah, that wasn't so good.
But I think Chris, you've got to be happy with that, surely, aren't you? To be take that from there, and you look at the goals you scored, and just you've got to be surely happy with that as a result. I mean,
really happy, mate.
Look, was on your side.
We wouldn't have got that last season. Not at all. Yeah. There's a certain resolve there. And I spoke about it with Paulinho being involved in the team now as well. I think that that's sort of steel changer. And that real drive to want to win.
Yeah.
And, you know, we changed six players from our Europe thing as well. And, you know, we're talking about
six.
Six players, totally different. So from Europe. So that shows you, although, well, looking at the bench, it's much better than it was last season, which is all we can do as a team, really, isn't it? Improve it. And that's what he's going to do. So, after this season or the next transfer window, not the proper one in summer, I think we're going to be in a better position to do a bit better, I think.
I don't know, there's something about Tottenham that, obviously as a Chelsea man, I'm trying not to obviously throw in some Chelsea bias in there, but just watching you guys play against Leeds, for one, you got very lucky. You got very lucky that they didn't punish you. I think, how many times did they hit the post? Was it just the once or maybe twice?
We hit the post as well.
Don't worry, then. We sent Agent Dominic down there from Everton to sort a job out. Don't worry about that. We sent Agent Dominic.
And I did laugh at his before the match. They said, maybe this is going to be the game. And I'm thinking, doubtful.
That it all clicks. Yeah, no. Because, again, it just looks like, even though you have Paulinho in there, that actually looks like he brings everything together well.
It does.
Much better than Bentancur does. I don't know if they're both playing together at the same time at the moment or. But
they have
either way.
Yeah.
But it just
been working really well.
And that's it. You definitely look a lot more solid, but I think it's still breaking down in the final third for you guys. I know Javis Siemens is in there now, having failed to get to Chelsea with that move failing because, it just failed.
Want the money. It was too much.
That's what you say, but mate, he's Chelsea through and through.
They tried to say you'd be in the third team in a couple of games.
It was a last resort. You had no options, mate. This was freaking, who was it? Was it William?
Eze left, Eze turned you off.
Literally, mate, so you guys are, backup dancers, basically.
Were you guys in the league so far?
I think we're, but don't worry, that'll quickly change. It just comes to the bridge.
We're just keeping third or second warm for Palace, so.
Literally.
Okay.
But, how do you think Simmons is finding things at the moment, because it looks like he's really struggling, if you ask me.
No, I think he's okay. He's not a left winger, and you would say that, by the way. He's not a left winger. He's a creative midfielder and plays off the left, so I think he'll be okay. He's still finding his feet. It's a quick pace. We just haven't got a striker.
You think he's shown the quality that you would be expecting of a player that was it 60? Was it 60 mil?
He's probably about four times better than Mudryk. So there we go.
Ooh, hello.
How much was Mudryk? Is that 100 million? I don't know.
Like 70.
He's going to be in the team this season. Wants the team this season.
I can guarantee Xavi Simons, although I think he's going to be okay for us, he's not going to be in the team as a season. Next match, Arsenal West Ham. Arsenal move along again.
Someone said that, didn't you? Didn't you say that, Steve? Or you, Chris?
Yeah, I think both I did say 2-0. Yeah,
I said 2.
Yeah, it's both of us said 2-0. So a little tick for it. I'm actually in the lead on the leaderboard, if there was a leaderboard. Another comprehensive win. West Ham still hasn't got it going. And they didn't look any in trouble at all, did they, Arsenal?
He'll come out after this international break. They'll be better.
Yeah. I was going to just ask, what do you think of them sacking Potter on the day of, on match day, basically?
That's really harsh. I think it was classless as well.
Yeah.
David Moyes said that, in his post-match conference. He basically said, in my time of management, managers don't get treated right. It was showing a bit of respect. He said, he's an opposition manager. He said he come out and did the pre-match.
Literally the day before.
He'd done everything. He said, then Moyes said, you turn up to a game. And he said, it's just disrespectful to a man. Yeah. You shouldn't do that. And for an opposition manager, I know he's got a West Ham history, but for him to say that, you sort of know he's trying to back the manager's camp there, to be fair.
Yeah. Can you imagine in an estate agency, the manager does the morning meeting and then the owner goes, just a 5-minute word, and then chins him off, lets him go and has to walk past all those staff after he's conducted the morning meeting. It would never happen.
Yeah.
He turns up to go to Bramley Moor and the bus isn't there. It's gone. Yeah.
Crazy.
So comprehensive, West Ham, they're just lackluster anyway, don't they? But that's my Spurs bias.
I was just going to say, do you think that actually had any bearing on West Ham's performance, given that the manager was confirmed pretty much straight away? I think it was the same day that Nuno...
That was against us. Was that one this weekend? That was...
That was the weekend before.
Yeah, weekend before.
Okay. Yeah, I'm behind.
No, yeah. Well...
I do think Eze is a game changer for Arsenal.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, he's definitely the guy, man. He's doing all right, isn't he?
Hard to watch him in an Arsenal shirt.
Yeah, it's hard to watch him for me as well.
Yeah, but, he's
a good player. and you weren't a big enough club for him. So there we go. United.
It's all about elevation,
Sunderland.
Christopher.
It is. And if you look up, we're above you. So there we go. United, Sunderland. Oh, this is massively going to get stabbed in the back at some point, I'm sure. United versus Sunderland. So United 2-0 win. We didn't have this down. We had this as a score draw, guys, didn't we? 1-2.
Yeah, Sunderland is. Yeah, don't know what happened.
Yeah, they've performed pretty well in the games that they've played so far, yeah. I wouldn't say it's more Man United. I'd probably say Sunderland probably lacked more than Man United actually performed. I think Man United might have a little bit of momentum working in their favour at the moment. But again, if you ask me, United just, expose them and they will just crumble. I think they were fortunate at Chelsea to, get that red card in 5 minutes and then... thereafter, as soon as the teams were balanced, Chelsea were pretty much all over them, basically, and technically we won the second half 1-0. So different circumstances.
We don't win games in one half, mate. You have to win them in both.
Slippery slope, that is.
Literally, it really is. But different circumstances. 11 players on the pitch, both sides, we would have walked them off the pitch. So
I think Sunderland were definitely the team which just dropped their quality from what they've been playing at, and I think the United are going to be one of these teams this season. Probably where they're going to be okay and then rubbish, okay and rubbish.
Yeah, I think they will. And, give them a few more games last year. I think they would have actually been relegation contenders. And even this year, I think there's an argument to say that they could be roped into that relegation battle, to be honest.
Bombshells.
Lovely. Oh, I'm just pointing out there that, five more games last year, they would have been in the mix. This time around, they've started as they basically finished last year. Under Amorim, which still surprises me that he's still in the job. If you ask me, I think United just don't really know when to cut ties with players and also managers. But at least he's been given the time, basically, to try and turn things around. But he's sticking to a formation that just isn't working. They don't have the players for it. So
interesting,
again,
didn't start Cunha at the weekend after all that big money move. Didn't try and fit him in. He went with Mount and Sesto.
And he did it right.
Yeah.
Mount did it right, didn't he? Scored a goal.
Yeah.
Talking about relegations, Villa, Burnley, another loss for Burnley. They're surefire to go down. I mean, at least they're putting up a fight and not capitulating like some teams would come up, losing by the old goal here or there. But 2-1 against Villa, a Villa at home. A Villa, okay, they're doing okay. They've picked up a few sort of decent results.
That'd be fine.
Yeah, I said 2-1, which is good. And we had 3-1 and 2-0 as well. So we all went for a home win there as well. And then, what's this here? What's this? Everton versus... Everton versus Palace. Jamie, over to you, mate. You were there, weren't you?
I'll be fair. And a live feed. So, absolute batter's first half. We were insanely rubbish. They were levels above us. Moyes went storming off at half-time. Not a single sub warmed up at half-time where they normally come out. I would imagine he cracked open an iron brew and literally went full Scottish on them because they came out second half. After 70 minutes, poor Palace, you could tell. We made the two changes. We put Big Beto on and put Alcaraz through the middle. And it did change the game. And there was a couple of incidents where Moyes got booked and it just seemed to get the whole place going. And then I still think, even though Wharton's come out as it wasn't, I fear it may have been a European hangover for them. And we just got into them. And then after that, it changed. But first half, we weren't within a game, within a kick of the game, whereas in the second half, it changed round, to be fair.
What do you think, Steve? Hangover? Squad depth?
Tale of two halves, wasn't it? It really was. I was genuinely, absolutely gutted. It was weird. As a football fan of a club that is used to losing probably 10, 12 games a season, to go on a 19-game unbeaten run, that first loss... It hurts so much. And my phone lit up like a bloody Christmas tree. Everyone's messaging me because I do like to give it. I'm not really great at taking it, I'll be honest. The first half we did well. Mateta missed from 5 yards. It was a really...
Mate, that tapping when he went round Pickford and had it squared to him, I actually thought that. I thought Everton had got a chance here because he wouldn't miss that. Then goes on the line, he went one way and he rolled it back to the post and I was like, we're in with a chance
tired.
Here.
It was a tired shot. I think there was one where he, like, you could have just put it to the right-hand side of Pickford and it went sort of 2 yards the other side of the post. And you're like, that's a tired shot. That's not a Premier League striker finish like he has been. But
yeah.
I said to my daughters, who are both mad Palace fans, I went, I'm worried. We haven't finished this game off. If we finished it off and it'd been 2-0 up, and it's Everton, and they have now become officially our bogey team. Same thing happened last year, didn't it? You know, last season, we lost 2-1 at yours. I think 1-0 up at our place in March, we lost 2-1 at home to you.
Yeah,
you know,
Dwight McNeil scored both in the second half when he was there last time.
Yeah, it's just frustrating. It was always going to happen. I'd rather it hadn't have happened against Everton because they're just becoming a bit of a bogey team. But
do you think that's going to go into people's heads now, do you?
Not from what I'm reading from the players and what Glasner is saying, etc. But then they're not going to say anything else, are they? So I hope they can just get back together. International break probably come at the right time. Consolidate and we go again. But I think we've got Bournemouth next, which is away, and with Semenyo on fire again, that's a worry.
He's class.
The Glasner's one classy man though. When you listen to his post match,
that's brilliant. He's a really decent manager. Wharton had a really, really good game. Yeah, I think they were just tired.
Hats off to Grealish as well for man of the match, and he basically said, "Well, I've got this." It's Wharton's.
He was on the wind-up, though, the whole game. Like, watching it on Sky, he had that smile about him, that sort of cocky little arrogance. And I love Grealish. I love everything about him in football.
He's a character.
And outside of football, what he does for families and Down syndrome children and stuff. Like, my missus loves him, and he is a generally nice bloke, but he was on the wind-up on Sunday. He was definitely on the wind-up.
Yeah, but he's gone back to being
a
big fish in a smallish pond, and that's the truth what he probably needed.
Suits him.
Every, and I'm not saying it, if you went there, every shirt you see has either got Grealish on it or Little Man in Jai. I'd actually love at the end of the season to see if they print one that's got Tarkovsky written on it or, I don't know, Mick and Cody, because it literally is, you're in Liverpool, so we stayed the night before. I went up after work and literally it's Grealish.
Is it a lone
Little
player?
Little Man in Jai, Grealish. And you think, right, it's just a big fish, really.
Have
now.
You fallen in love with a lone player then, Jamie?
100%.
I saw your message afterwards and I was like, I can't help it. I was, because Grealish, his mum and dad are in a box just over my left shoulder, not now, but obviously in the game. And he comes and stood on his knees in front of me. And I'll be honest, Steve, I was crying. So,
has your missus bought you some these sort of football shorts yet? The short ones?
All right. No, not yet. My calves aren't quite at that level yet.
There'd be speedos on him.
Yeah.
Exactly. I've not made that level yet with my calves.
Wow. Jamie, can you just put this on tonight?
I was going to say, there's an obligation to buy in there, right?
We've got option to buy. Obligation, £50 million.
Okay.
Yeah, so yeah.
Okay. I mean, I'd be surprised if that's not exercised, to be honest. I mean, I know that's probably a little bit over the value that you would usually spend on players. In fact, what is the most expensive player you've actually purchased in the past? Or who is it?
Oh.
Romelu, I'd imagine, from Chelsea.
Okay, yes. That was 70-odd. Was that 70-odd?
Because we had him on loan.
Yeah.
When he had the dreadlocks, we had him on loan and he had 29 and then he came back the next year as number 10 and with the short hair and he had
that's it.
70 that's mil, it. I think it was, something like that.
Yeah, you're right.
So,
that's it.
And do you know
it.
What?
So I think
we're talking about him this weekend saying, like, you've got to get away from Beto being a Romelu. And he was like a one in a million find for us, he was insane. I remember when you came back to, when Chelsea came back to Goodison and he walked through and he just smashed it in and he's just got that about him. It's just a different, we don't get players like that often, so we need, that's the sort of thing we need now, to be fair. We took
superb guys, too good.
What's his name from Chelsea on loan last year?
Armando Broja,
couldn't get fit, couldn't get the team.
And to be honest, I'm glad we've actually got him off the books. It's unfortunate because of so much hype around him. But me personally, I just don't have time for players that spend more time in the injury room than they do on the pitch or are available to play. And as soon as that's the case, then, you know, quickest, fastest way out the door, please, in my opinion. So
Okay, so let's run through the other games quickly, guys, so we can get to our main topic. Newcastle against Forest. Newcastle winning that 2-0 at home.
What we thought?
I actually went for a 2-1 Forest. Just hopefully Ange would turn it around, but he's not going to do that, unfortunately. It won't be too long. Wolves, Brighton, 1-1. We had this as a 1-1 or a 2-1, so 1-1 draw for You and me, Jamie, I think. That's good. And then Brentford against City. We actually thought this would be a bit more comfortable for City than it was. Obviously, Brentford just losing by the one goal for City. And I think the structures, they've still got that structure, haven't they? They're hard to break down, especially at home.
Yeah. And the goal was just, it was just Haaland being Haaland from a couple of years ago. He just bullied the defender, literally. It just looked like, oh, from a centre back point of view, you don't want to see it, a centre back being just bullied. But from a, you know, from a football fan perspective, it was just, just get out the way and, top quality finishing him.
So. You can't let him get last man and being in a position to roll you as a centre-half. You've either got to get a blocker in or you can't let him get on your shoulder and that half, like Lukaku back in there, when he gets that turn, it's game over. Yeah. He's got you in his pocket, rolling you around, he's pulling under the ball and away you go.
Yep.
Dear. I think that Man City, they're starting to tick.
Warm up a little bit, yeah.
They are warming up. Right, let's get on to our main topic, our main event, shall we say, which is also what I like to call a non-event in the scheme of things, I think. Government this week announced a raft of new things they're going to do to help the housing market, help speed up the process of private treaty, buying and selling, saving the consumer hundreds and hundreds of pounds and making it a lot more easier to buy and sell property. Let me say one word to everybody. This is what I think about it. Bullshit. There we go. I've said it. Ed,
yep.
Being a solicitor, where do you sit on it? Will it make any iota of difference?
Yeah, no.
For anything they've said?
No, it really won't. I mean, there's so many factors that change how quickly a transaction proceeds. And ultimately speaking, it comes down to the actual buyers, and the sellers. Everyone is doing things for different reasons. And ultimately speaking, I don't think any of these changes will make a significant difference at all in terms of how long things are taking. It might obviously allow you to get on top of things earlier, but if you're waiting on finance, if you're waiting on a different transaction to complete before you can then complete your own current purchase that you're undertaking, nothing's happening and the delays will still continue. So yeah, there's so many factors and these don't really go to the main root of what the issue is.
Hello? No, they really don't. I mean, obviously, for people who have been away and not had any form of any media, there's a few points in there, 5 points essentially. Digitization, it's easy for me to say. Upfront information for buyers, professional standards and consumer redress, consumer education and transparency, and market innovation. So that's how they were going to adapt it there as well. Digitization, obviously, that's key. It's already in place. It's already been done. There's companies out there trying to push speed through transactions. It's just, am I right in saying, Eb, that every different solicitor has a different way of doing things?
So you have, and this is where some of these changes might actually assist. A lot of solicitors don't like, for instance, reviewing a legal pack and addressing legal inquiries until they have all searches, for instance, back from their search providers. So a lot of people don't think it makes sense to raise inquiries and then you wait 6 weeks for the last search to come back in and then raise more inquiries based on all the searches. Others would rather get the legal pack in, get the searches ordered there and then, in 6 week times or however long it takes, once that search is returned, then they can go through the process of raising inquiries. Then it's a matter of waiting on the sellers to deal with what they need to deal with and hopefully satisfy any inquiries that you have. So yeah, everyone has different ways of doing things. And it really just depends on who you get.
So we talked about
you're only as quick as the slowest person, aren't you, really? No matter what you do in the process, you're only as quick as the slowest person, aren't you?
That's it. Now,
Couldn't you just agree as a framework, and there's no legislation needed for it. It's just everybody agrees to do a thing in a certain way to start off with and do things by certain time periods as well. Could that not actually help speed up the process in general just by talking to people and having associations? Surely.
It could do, but all it really takes sometimes to out of sync or ensure you miss a deadline is the willingness from your client to actually cooperate with you. So one of the biggest things right now that will slow a solicitor down from reviewing a legal pack that they've received, from ordering searches straight away, And there's almost an expectation that as soon as a client has said that, yeah, this is my solicitor, they should be able to crack on, get the searches ordered and get things moving. But from a solicitor's perspective, what a lot of people just don't realize is that, one, you have to know who your client is. So that is understand them, get their identification documents. And if it's a company transaction, understand the company and be satisfied with that. And if you're buying, then it's a matter of understanding where exactly their money's come from. Now, until you've understood where exactly their money has come from or the original source of their funds derived from, you cannot do anything. You cannot carry out substantial work on that matter. And that's the one thing that I think it's everyone outside the profession won't really understand. When you say that, oh yeah, it's held up with the solicitors, it's held up at legals, it's generally because when you've, as a solicitor, when you've asked your client to provide you with a document and they either, you know, go around sourcing it from their accountant, from their tax advisors, from whoever it might be to justify where their monies have come from. It's not a matter of days. Sometimes it is a matter of weeks. Sometimes it might take longer for some certain clients to give you what you need. Then you start delving into the realms of dealing with clients overseas or outside, like the UK, or where funds are coming from the UK. That just increases the threshold even more in terms of you being satisfied with where the monies have come from and with your client and knowing full well their background and why it is they're doing what they're doing, why it is they're using you as a law firm when there's 100 other law firms that they could possibly use that might make it a streamlined process for them because they understand dealing or what it means to deal with international clients. You know, so there's just a lot of things that a lot of people outside the profession won't understand that hinders you from being able to crack on from the day that a client tells you that, yeah, this is my solicitor, send all the documents to them. Literally, from our perspective, there's so much more that has to be done before you can even look at the legal documents and start raising inquiries or even accept money on account so you can get the searches ordered.
I think also things that come up, isn't there? Things such as, we have them up here, and I'm sure Steve and Chris have them where they are, but like deed of variations, they just literally cause an absolute stink. They literally can take...
Yeah.
If you've got someone there that's not quick, there's no way for an item... They go through a pile, you just take. As soon as you hear the word deed of variation in our office now, people should have like, oh no.
And that's it. That's another 6 weeks added to the transaction minimum.
At least where I am. It's an additional 6 weeks.
Exactly that. So there's additional cost. So the cost of dealing with the deed of variation, whether you have to go to a third party to deal with that, it usually is regarding management companies or leases with landlords, etc. So if you then have to negotiate the cost, who's paying for that? Is that the seller or the buyer? Generally speaking, it'll be the seller as the owner of the property at that moment in time. And then you have, you know, delays whilst people work out who should actually deal with what, who's paying for what. And then you have to actually instruct the solicitors acting for that third party that would agree the variation. Then it's a matter of sorting out their fees, who's effectively paying for that, and how quickly can they then turn it around on their side. So yeah, and then in fact something else that I didn't actually mention was technology. We use an app that allows clients wherever you are across the world to onboard yourself, to do your ID, to provide all your documents and anything else you might need, complete the protocol forms as well. If you're selling, again, upload all documents relating to your source of funds, and we link our app as well to a third party provider that's FCA regulated. It's all approved, so they can link their bank accounts and approve their source of funds. That's us. Other solicitors across the country may not be using these technologies at all. So when it comes to actually dealing with source of funds, you're having to manually, and this is still an activity that we still have to do here, but you have to manually go through a client's statement line by line, just reviewing the transactions and anything that looks suspicious or anything that should require further explanation because it's over a certain amount, whether that's over £1,000 or two, whatever it might be. But it's a hard task. Then being satisfied, then going back and forth with your client whilst they explain each transaction on their bank statements. You know, so, you know, the digitalization, that is something that can definitely help, but it requires all law firms to get on board with that. It requires all law firms to be moving in a position whereby they are using modern technology and they are capable of turning things around with their clients swifter than they
can. That's the problem, Eb, isn't it?
Yeah.
Again, it goes down to what Jamie was saying. We said this on past podcasts. You're only as good as the slowest person in the chain. So from a conveyancing point of view, unless every single company is working in the same way, where every single conveyancer has the same capped, say, 50 cases with the same technology implemented within their companies, how the hell does it speed the process up? Like they're saying, it's going to be 4 weeks quicker. How is it going to be four weeks quicker?
Yeah. No.
And the other thing is going to have, like, you've got to have the leasehold details and the freehold details, and you've got to have this and that. Well, doesn't that form part of A, B, and C that we've already, like, have to do anyway?
Yeah.
You know, like that's all originally, you know, put in place that estate agents have to do that by law. I know a lot.
Well, here's the key facts.
Steve,
here's the key facts on it. I mean, upfront information for buyers is what we're talking about. Key facts. Tenor. So obviously freehold or leasehold.
Yep. Has to be on it.
Council tax band, EPC rating, property type. I mean, all these things you guys do anyway.
We have to.
Then we've got, titles as well. Well, some people do that already. Leasehold terms, searches. This is where it might be interesting because they've said about, we spoke about searches before anyway on the podcast, searches might be possibly that they will be automatically renewed. Extended, if that makes sense, and done
after the 3 months.
Yeah, after 3 months, rather than it's a cost element, isn't it? As well,
I've got a question about if you don't mind asking. So, if my vendor orders, we won't say the word a hit pack, but let's say we went back to them days, and I asked a couple of solicitors locally what they thought straight away, and they're like, "This is a disaster, Jamie. I thought they might be on board. They're like, it's not going to speed anything up. It's terrible. We shouldn't do it." If my vendor ordered a hit pack and it's got searches in it, is it quite right that the buyer's solicitor could still say they're not our searches, they've been done by a vendor, not for our client, as in, i.e. my mortgage lender wants the buyer to have their own searches? Could that be a thing where they actually reject the vendor's searches and still make you buy your own searches?
In my opinion, for one, it shouldn't be. However, there will be certain circumstances where the searches that are being ordered by the solicitor or the agent on behalf of the vendor are personal searches, and personal searches, therefore, some lenders and some law firms ultimately just don't accept them. One, because their insurance policy doesn't permit them to use it, or it requires you to have a certain policy in place. And that would be the only reason why it would be rejected. But if it was simply because it's in the name of the vendor that's obtained it or paid for it, that shouldn't really be a factor that, because at the end of the day, the information in the search is going to be the same, whether it's in their name or yours. So that should have no bearing on anything or on a lender's willingness to accept it.
And I've heard that people have been using the word their personal indemnity, and that it's obviously their risking using a third party's searches.
It searches, yeah.
And I exactly said, well, that. Actually, then again, we actually just then cost, as much as we're trying to save money, we're not. Was the transaction still going to be as expensive for a buyer and cost the seller more?
Exactly that. Because, you'll still find yourself having to order searches for your clients.
Yeah, and I'm sure commercially a conveyance to stroke solicitor makes money on searches. I get it. They cost you X amount. You charge the client at that. I'm sure that there's obviously an element of that in there as well.
Not. I wouldn't be able to tell you, actually. That's probably something we'll need to...
I can tell you that there will be for some solicitors, 100%, and I've spoken to some as well, because obviously not all of them are the cheapest, but some of them have these factors built in as well to make them look more competitive, if that makes sense. So that does happen.
Okay.
And what are they meaning by the condition report as well? Are they saying that there's going to be a survey done at the point of marketing the property?
They did say that, didn't they? They said it's going to be something like a property sort of a condition report.
Yeah. Is that a full survey?
No, it's not.
So I'm assuming that's, would that be a home buyer survey? Because if that is equivalent to a home buyer survey.
It's not going to happen, mate. Because condition report is done by a condition assessor. So I actually had some experience with this with the MOD, actually, when I was doing EPCs. The condition report is how old is the kitchen, this kind of thing. And you've done it off the basis of an app basis. So
you'll definitely get a lender that does that as well. I will not accept that home report.
Yeah. But going back to the same reasons of HIP, it's not going to work at all.
Definitely a lender will go, no way. They could know that person as much as you declare it. That agent, it's not been done by them. There's no way they're going to accept a report from someone else. I'd be very surprised if they did.
Well, Steve, you were saying about some stuff you do yourself in your company regards to upfront information anyway, regards to even on valuations, where if that was provided, then it's a lot better than a lot of agents you do anyway. At least you know exactly what you're looking at. So
yeah, that's the thing. We use a company called Spriff to give us a full report on every single property we go out to value and then market, even down to radon gas, pylons, road noise, flood risk, you name it. I'm trying to think of other things, even down to schools, Ofsted reports, nearest bus stop. So everything is there as part of that marketing package we already do, as well as the fact that you have to put on the tenure, on the details, the length of the lease, any charges in regards to ground rent, maintenance charges, etc. It's just like someone's turned around and gone, yeah, this is what we need to do, but actually not done any research and gone, oh yeah, actually we made this law 18 months ago.
They've never actually asked anybody who was actually in the industry. They've just fought.
That's the biggest problem that they have. And one of the reasons why it just won't work, because there is no liaising with the actual professionals that deal with these documents on a day in, day out basis. And you had that with the Building Safety Act and the whole confusion behind whether you can act on buildings over X amount of meters high. There was no consultation with professionals. And you also had that with the property information forms and the newer ones that have since come out that clients are required to complete. You know, if you're not going to consult with the people that are dealing with it on a day-to-day basis, then you will see backlash. You will see a reluctance of people to really get behind it and push it on their clients as something that will actually improve the processes here. It's only when it becomes compulsory that, you know, you simply just have to get on board and just crack on. And
it's not going to, like they said, it's going to half fall throughs by 50%. How is that going to half fall throughs by 50%? Fall throughs could be a matter of things.
Literally. So it's really just clutching. It's broad statements to apply.
The BBC said as well, it's £800 as conveyancer charges to sell a house now. I was thinking, conveyance I spoke to, like, that's terrible. It makes us look like they just took a figure when it's £800 for a conveyancer. There's not a thing, it's not an online conveyance. There's not a conveyancer in my area that would be cost you. It's loads more than that. So they were up in arms. Then where do you get these figures from? And going back to what you said then, Emma, about flats that are over two and up, over three stories and stuff, they overnight made them apartments nearly unsellable. The people saying, what do I do pretty now much. With it? I can't. Yep. And it's like you said, we didn't consult the right people. We just put this thing out there and people are going,
that's it.
Well, I can't sell it. I'm stuck with this flat and what do I do with it?
Yep.
Point three was professional standards and consumer redress. Well, estate agents always already have to be part of a redress scheme anyway, don't you?
Yeah.
And, so it's already in place. Professional standards. Who's going to police it? Nobody. Nobody's going to police it.
That's the question. Who's going to police this?
Yeah.
ML's not policed enough. There's agents putting deals together willy-nilly and just fly by the seat of their pants.
Yeah.
Which is
well, in Eb's profession, obviously, solicitors in particular, you've got to be massively, that's what you suggested. Your time comes through at your AML and your proof of funds. And you know there's somebody, there's another company somewhere else and they're doing it nowhere near you. And that's the same as the estate agency. So who polices it? Nobody.
Exactly that.
Why do we do it again, boys?
Because you want to do the right thing and it's the right thing to do.
That's it.
I should have worked harder at school.
And that's it. Mate, I wish I took sports seriously before I left school, actually, to be honest. If I did. Oh, man, I'm telling you.
Chelsea, 350 grand a week.
Literally, to be honest, I didn't actually play football. I actually played rugby when I was in school. Nice. Yeah, I was a rugby
didn't
guy.
Didn't know that. We'll have a chat about that.
Yeah, one day.
Egg chase us.
Yeah.
Consumer education transparency. Well, consumer education, that is down to just in general is something which you can't do as an estate agent anyway, to be fair. You can educate them as best you can do. But they, again, that's got to be lipid police, isn't it? Who's educating? Transparency. Well, again, it's policing, enforcement, transparency, even down to upfront information for buyers. You've got a thing called disclosure, obviously. You've got to disclose things upfront. Yeah. Well, that will sort that out. But you guys already do that. Some of you don't do it at all.
It's true. And, you know, sellers leave themselves open to, you know, claims for misrepresentation in the event that they misrepresent any information or don't provide any information that could impact the buyer's decision as to whether they proceed or not. So, again, contractually speaking, there are methods for redress if needs be. But again, how often does it actually happen? Is this really a big issue that needs to be looked into? In my opinion, it won't really change anything.
It's a vote winner.
Of course it is.
Just like the Tories have come out and said, we're going to abolish stamp duty. Like, it's
crazy.
Really? Are you really going to do that and lose millions of pounds? I don't think so.
Yeah, it's too much of a money earner for them, to be honest, for the government. Exactly. It just brings in way too much money for them to scrap it.
We'd tapped it somewhere else if we took it off, wouldn't we, at the end of the day? So yeah. It's not like...
That's exactly right. I was listening to a podcast about taxes today, about how they actually were enforced originally, and they were taxes for the rich. It was called the Robin Hood tax. Taken from the rich and given to the poor. And then they basically moved into the middle classes. But they agreed it. They did it slowly because the government wanted more money, ultimately. Well, governments, they'll get you in the end, won't they?
They will get you in the end.
They
will.
So what we're saying, absolute rubbish, not going to make it. There's a few elements there which we already do.
I've written down a few points, which are basically government popularity statement. That's all it is. Bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. But that's in a few times, to be fair.
Yeah, I think we've got don't know if you've got my general feeling
on the matter.
Hopefully it's a step in the right direction.
Well, some of it is.
Vote Chris.
Vote Chris. Yeah, yeah. Come on. Things like what would change things. We talked about overvaluing on this podcast before, but I mean, I didn't know until a couple of days ago, actually, that HMRC published all the transaction prices after every single transaction. After two weeks. Why isn't that public information? 2 weeks after transaction, HMRC. But they won't disclose it because of personal protection, etc. But it's going to be disclosed later on by Land Registry anyway. So why not have it there?
Yeah.
Then you would have a key thing as a valuer to go out there. This one completed 2 weeks ago. That's the price. Bang. That was solve it, wouldn't it? Well, help it.
It would. I'm just trying to think of the only reason behind that. And the only reason I can tell behind that and wouldn't really be a justified reason because most taxes paid immediately on the day of completion. But it's only in rare circumstances where you will be able to, you generally have 14 days after a sale or purchase has even completed to then submit the tax and make the payment for it.
And it's digitized.
Exactly. So there's no real reason for that to be at all.
Why is it not put out across there? We've got to look at Rightmove to see how much. Well, we that says it's sold, and then not wait for 7 months for it to show on the Land Registry.
Literally.
It's crazy.
Literally. So, you know, it's hard to say that, yeah, we're going to digitalize this process when the processes we have that are digitalized, such as Land Registry, are estimated to take anywhere between 6 to 18 months to complete.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, these are processes that have been digitalized for how many, for, you know, 20, 30, 40 years, a long time, basically. And yet it is as slow as it is.
So is the process broken? It's not, is it? It's very difficult. Is the process of home buying and selling broken? Did they need to get involved? Not really, but...
No, not really. I just think that,
From what you said from your side, you've got the selling side, you've got the frustrations on our side, and a lot of it comes down to, Stephen and Jamie will tell me better, comes down to just communication sometimes. It's not there, and frustration that things aren't fed back that this is why.
Is that right, Steve? Yeah,
communication's shot. It is shot. People are hiding behind emails, hiding behind working from day homes. You know, like at the end of the day, like, solicitors and estate agents need each other. You know, whether they get on all the time or not, you know, they need each other. Like the cost of running an office is in the tens of thousands of pounds every single month. And when I'm hearing certain companies saying we work to a 19-week completion date, it's gospel truth as well. 19
That's crazy.
Weeks to the client. And I'm like, wow. Who decided it was 19 weeks? When did that happen? And why is that then being allowed? 19 weeks, that's what we work to. So if we do it in 14, happy days. It's not. It's like in the Southwest, it's 4.3 months. And it's the house process in buying, conveyancing, has apparently increased by 36% in the last 6 years. Why has that happened? Is that because a lot of older solicitors retired during COVID or people left because they couldn't deal with the stress, they haven't been replaced?
I think it's a mix of quite a few things. And yeah, you mentioned quite a lot of those. COVID, for one, saw a lot of professionals in the property sector just leaving altogether. It's almost overnight. People just found a different calling when they were forced to basically evaluate their lives and take stock of what was going on around them. So they left the profession and a lot of them haven't returned.
Yeah. Well, I'm testament to that. I started my business. I started my business in 21 after kind of something happened and I was like, I need to evaluate my life and I'm going to go off on my own and do it.
And that's it.
But when I started the company, there was two of us. There's now eight of us. But we had to
I've got a way to fix this.
Because we needed the staff to do the business and do the communication side of it. But I don't know. Yeah. Go on, Jenny. How do we solve it?
I thought of a way. We can stop this consultation and we can charge a million to this podcast. So the government sets as conveyance, it has a minimum fee, not a maximum fee. And they have to have people per case ratio. So you could, not a maximum, but you cannot charge less than £1,500 plus VAT. But
who is policing
it? You have to have
law firms.
You have to have a conveyance and an assistant one, but they have to have a person per ratio. When you get to that ratio, you cannot take any more work on until you can do it.
And that's it. And that's exactly the model that we work on at Wolferson's, actually.
Don't race to the bottom with your fee, basically.
We literally have a set amount of cases that each fee owner should deal with. Each fee owner naturally has a paralegal or assistant that assists them. We're actually changing our model ever so slightly where we have at least potentially 3 to 4 paralegals per fee owner. And those paralegals will be supervised whilst they oversee those cases by the fee owner, by the qualified professional, whether it's a conveyancer or whether it's a solicitor, it doesn't matter. But ultimately, everyone has caps, and that is the model we work on. And everyone has set minimum standards and requirements that we adhere to. And that is, you know, every time we are instructed, Chris will tell you, every time we're instructed, if I don't pick up the phone to a client and tell them what the process looks like, what the costs are, what this entails, who you can lean on if I'm not around, then someone else in my team will do. But again, when we set that standard, clients know what to expect from the beginning, and we look to meet it at every opportunity that we can. But I think that is definitely a way forward for the industry. A lot of solicitor firms simply just take the work in, take in as much as they can, and just keep churning it out as much as quick as they can. That model, again, you may have seen that with, you know, your conveyancing belts out there that that have, you know, the group emails. You're in XYZ's team, and it might be picked up by someone, but that someone then has to have that work reviewed by the overall case handler, who's basically managing a team of about 15 people. So nothing really generally happens quickly. The costs are cheap, yes, but the length of the transaction takes forever and a day. And there's no chance of that completing in a 4 to 6 week period, which should really be realistic.
I'll meet you tomorrow, Ed. We'll go to Parliament tomorrow. We'll march Parliament, get it sorted. Tell them to refund all the millions they've got on consultation.
Literally, can you imagine? Can
you imagine? Premier Property Podcast has sorted it. Chris Mervyn's face is in Parliament.
But that's why the forfeiture rate, that's why the forfeiture rate is so high at the moment, is because the process is taking longer. People fall out of love. They continuously look on Rightmove of an evening. There is more choice now. It is a buyer's market.
Yep.
And they've got family inferences that are coming down and saying, oh, it's taking like 16 weeks. What have you seen this one? It falls through. And then you've got to start the whole process again. Like, from that side of it, it's archaic from my point of view.
And there's some...
You can list something, sell something, and wait and 6 months to earn a penny.
Do you know what? If you look at a new build market, for instance, the new build market requires you to put a deposit down. And that's one way to secure people. And if that's something that's introduced in the open market transactions, then that might see a reduction, a significant reduction, in my opinion, in people that are willing to pull out of a deal. When you've got £2,000, £5,000 locked away in a estate agent's account, unless you complete, where are you going?
And they want a 28-day exchange as well, Eb. Otherwise, they start pulling the incentives that they've given that buyer.
Yep.
You're not doing your turf now. You're not having your turf. You're not having those extra tiles.
Sounds like
Auckland
to me, Chris.
Yeah.
There's a lot to be learned from that side of it, and it's finite. Of course it is, but obviously...
But it's unrealistic, 28 days.
It's unrealistic for every buyer and obviously every lender to you know, no lenders will...
Target.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. But there is...
Fun times
ahead. Hey, thanks for doing that, mate. That's cool. Okay.
I think we need a part two of this podcast. We've got to an hour and 2 minutes already.
That's crazy. Yeah, definitely a lot more to be said. That's for sure.
Definitely. Let's quickly go on to finish with football, shall we? Team of the year, team of the season so far, if we can do. Put some names ahead.
In goal, Sanchez.
Sanchez.
I'm joking.
I was going to say, please tell me you're joking. Wow.
And by the way, it doesn't. Right. It's not... It's not Palace all the way through, if that makes sense. There are some good Palace players in there, actually, I would put in. So
I've gone online a minute here, and I've researched a team of the year so far this season. And They've got Nick Pope.
Not a chance. No way.
It's just not possible.
I'd say Palace fan, obviously. Henderson's up there.
I think he is. He's a good player.
Sunderland's keeper. Sunderland, Pickford, Henderson.
Yeah. I'd agree with that.
Yeah, I think so. Definitely. Who have they got at left back?
At left back, they got James Garner from Everton.
He played 3 games. They did well, but Christ, that's probably a bit disrespectful to people that play left back, but yeah, we'll take it.
At right back, they've got Timber from Arsenal, but I'd put Daniel Munoz up there with 6 goals and 6 assists.
Yeah, I think he's a good player. Really good player. I mean, I would have put Livramento on the other side, but he's obviously not, he's fallen off a little bit, hasn't he, since he's moved, so... I thought he'd be doing a lot better because he was a class player. No.
Centre back?
I'll put Gaye down because I think he's class.
Gaye, he's one of them, on this site.
Yeah.
Yep.
And the other one?
probably have to get in an Arsenal defender in there, probably Gabriel, if anyone. You know, they have been defensively solid for most part of the season.
I don't disagree that, to be fair, probably. They've both been a fair centre-half pairing, haven't they?
Yeah, they have.
Who they put down?
And even that new defender that they have, oh gosh, what was his name again? They got him for dirt cheap. I think it was only like 14 million or something.
Well, for Arsenal? Something along those.
Yeah, for Arsenal, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And he's coming a few times to cover for Saliba or Gabriel.
Tony Adams.
Yeah, I'll try and find it.
Martin Keown. Those are the days.
They've put the Bournemouth.
He's definitely a good centre back.
No, that's not a bad shot. We haven't had, apart from Gaye, there hasn't been a massive standout one, obviously in previous years, Van Dijk in particular. Wow, he's class. But back in the day, we obviously had some fantastic centre backs. And I'm obviously as a Spurs fan, I've got a good centre back pairing. Are they top? No, they make mistakes. Oh, they go AWOL.
Yeah, they have the ability to be. Yeah, and that's it. I think one of them always lets down the other. Obviously, you got Van de Ven. He has the pace to honestly just his pace is
get
just
him out of trouble. Yeah, it gets
and that's
trouble.
It. But Romero, on the other hand, his discipline, and then you have just positionally speaking, is sometimes up in the
turns
air.
Turns like a bus.
He's got a mistake in him every game, Romero.
Yeah, he does. I think this season and towards the end of last season, he's definitely cleaned up his act. He seems a lot more reliable. At least Tottenham. I'd say that. Again, defensively.
Structure, it's down to Frank. It's structure and pushing on, definitely. Right, midfield. Who's midfield?
I'd say no.
First name on anyone's team sheet, and if it's not, it's a problem.
What's a player?
Do you support Chelsea?
Yeah, I do. In case no one realised. But I generally think, all Chelsea bias aside, just what he does, he basically does the job of two defenders. Literally, in that number six position, he covers so much and he's adding goals to the role that he's playing. I know the pundits this week were discussing who the best midfielder is, and the only person that didn't say Caicedo was Carragher, who said Declan Rice was probably his number one midfielder at the moment.
I'd throw Wharton in there as well, I'd throw Wharton, Declan Rice, Caicedo. I'd pick an M.
Really?
I would.
Even Xhaka from Sunderland, to be honest.
Yeah, apart from the last game where they went AWOL, both him and Henderson. But other than that, he's had a really good start to this campaign, hasn't he?
Yeah, that's a good shout, to be fair. He went back to his old club this weekend and did him a favour, took Matey Boy out in the box, tomb through and through.
Would you put Kudos in there at all? He's been a little bit quiet, but he did pop up with a goal.
Second assist behind Semenya, I think. So he needs to score more, but all our goals are not going to come from me strikers,
we've got a striker. True.
But Semenya.
He has to be in there.
Semenya.
100%. He's an £80 million player, definitely.
Yeah.
And this would be his last season, though, but he'd be off somewhere else.
Unfortunately, it will be,
Chelsea.
Mm. Are we going for a duo with William Alanjai and Jack Grealish as well?
Mm.
Oh, Steve, stop it. Them two that scored them goals against Palace at the weekend.
I've forgotten about them already. It's all about the international break now.
I really like seeing Grealish do well.
Yeah.
He hasn't hit the heights of where he was, obviously, in other seasons to be in this particular team, I don't think.
So
I'd have to have a chat with him and sit him on the bench.
Yeah, possibly. I think Semenya and Kudos were probably just slightly above him. Not much.
No.
No way, man. I'm out. I'm going to go football training anyway. I'm out. I'm done.
Hey, but hang on. It's a striker, yeah? You can get Beto in. Come on, you can say Beto.
Barry or Beto, you can pick them. Don't matter to me.
I'll put both of them in.
Crazy.
Haaland.
Oh, 100% Haaland.
He's come alive this year. I would have said João Pedro, but he seems to have fallen off in the last few games, to be honest, which is disappointing. Walter Mada, that's another player. Yeah. He's coming in. He's hit the ground running. Yeah, he has. And aside from that, I'd probably say Brentford striker, actually. Brentford striker has been there. He's been a problem.
Thiago,
yeah, that's the one. He's got a few goals.
Strong.
And he is. And he puts himself about. He does a lot of work. So, yeah, those are the few players that I'd throw into the mix. But yeah, disappointing to see João Pedro down the list. But I can't. It's all based on performance, and performance-wise, he's not there yet.
Can I just give you a hint? He's not going to be listening, so don't worry about it.
You never know. You never know, mate. It just takes that one repost, and mate, it might fall into his lap. Literally. I might catch him on my LinkedIn. That's the only form of social media I have, really. Nice. I say social media, but media, should I say.
Manager of the season so far? I'm going to say Glasner.
Glasner has to be. Yeah.
They're punching above, aren't they? And they're consistent and they've got
Can we have Grealish in now? I've said Glasner.
He can play 45 and then Kudos comes on. There you go.
And that's it, mate. I'll tell you what, on this one, a player that's really making Grealish look pretty good, and this might probably lean on my Chelsea bias, is Dewsbury Hall. I mean, Dewsbury Hall has come in and he does a lot of the grunt work. Yeah, he is. And I'm surprised Chelsea sold him, to be honest, because it was towards the latter stage of the season. And again, he was heavily involved in our Europa Conference League games. And you could see the worth that he could actually bring. The only issue being that, you know, he's up against, you know, your Palmers, your Caicedo, your Enzos.
And that counts as poor profit, doesn't it? Got there wrong time.
Yeah.
Wrong time. Because my mate seems to get older at the Bridge. And he said to me, you've got a hell of a player there, Jamie. He's unfortunate. He's got better players in that position at the moment.
And that's it. Was glad to see him getting game time and leaving to actually go to a team where he could get game time. And I'm also surprised that West Ham weren't actually in for him, because if anyone needed a midfielder that does the work he does and has the quality that he does, it was them. Yeah, I think they passed on the opportunities. Yeah, strange one. But Everton, you guys got a bargain there. Obviously made a loss on him, I believe. What's a 20 million pound loss?
It was 25 mil, I think, didn't it?
Yeah, you did. And we got him for 40 or thereabouts, I think it was. So, yeah.
Superb. Superb.
Drink water years ago, wasn't it?
Literally. But we actually made money getting rid of him this time. Literally.
Okay.
I think Drinkwalker's actually in construction nowadays, actually.
Yeah, what a story that is. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Incredible.
But that's incredible. That's what can happen, kids, isn't it? That's what can happen.
Yeah.
Okay, well, look, guys, that's full time on today's podcast. Let's wrap it up, if that's okay. Is the writing... Will anything happen with this government plan? No, I don't think so.
No.
It's pointless. It's another one of those ones which is going to dissipate away and, it's not something which will happen, I don't think.
Yeah.
But obviously, there are things which we can do and change. And a lot of the stuff, the good agents and good solicitors are already doing it. There we go.
That's it.
And it just needs to be adapted, and no point enforcing it because ultimately no one's policing it anyway. But it needs to be changed for everybody for the better good. And today, people want to get paid, they want to get money, they want to move, don't they? And they want to do it in a good time scale. And that's the key to it. Thanks for listening to Property Premier League. I've been your host, Chris Mervin, ably assisted by Jamie Asplund and Steve Green.
Thank you very much.
Thank you to this week, funny guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for this week's guest, Eb Ola. Thanks, Eb, mate. Really appreciate
you for having me
and taking the butt of everything that's wrong with conveyancing and also stating what's right with conveyancing. So well done, you.
Yeah, you can only try.
Yeah, we'll be back next week with more insights and debates from the world of property and the beautiful game. They think it's all over. Well, you know the rest.